This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 167 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And joining me, Mr. John Swainston is today's guest. John's been in the photo industry for, well, most of his working life and has seen it from many different countries' perspectives. Today, he is the Senior Vice President for Asia and Oceania for the Daymen group of companies, which we know of as Maxwell here in Australia, best known for their LowPro bags and more recently, Acme-made computer bags. John, give us a bit of a rundown of your career.
Goodness, I get a little bit worried that it's been really too long, and I'm sure it's time to go out to pasture, but I still love this business.
Yeah,
photography is just really, really a compelling business. I started out actually not in photography, but in the audio business.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, a bit like you, Bruce. No, I started out as a would-be disc jockey. I had the most awful mobile discotheque name. It was called Zodiac.
Right.
Your appointment with the stars, no less. But that was 1969, and, you know, as they say, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't smoking the right stuff.
That's right. So how did you get out of audio and into photography?
Well, I got into audiovisual. I joined a company called Bell and Howell.
Right.
Now, you may remember at school that you had things called 16mm films. Perhaps you were too young for that.
Yeah.
But I certainly did.
Okay.
And they were the world leader in 16mm. So I was headhunted by someone from a retail business I was working in because we were the big retailer for acoustic research. I had that wonderful experience of getting to know quite well a celebrated audio man, Henry Kloss, who went on to do a whole bunch of other things. But at that time, he was involved in audio, in acoustic research. And he produced the world's first loudspeaker that could reproduce the lowest organ note in the famous Saint-Saëns Organ Symphony, number
right.
three. And so we were the biggest dealer in London, and they said, time you come and work for Bell & Howell, who's our UK distributor, and I joined them.
Right.
And then quickly moved into the audiovisual business, 16mm educational products, and then consumer products, and then moved to the United States from the UK in 1976, and headed up product management for that company in Chicago. And then got moved down here in Australia.
So it sounds like you were more into moving images than still images.
Well, I was.
Right.
But I'd actually started life with a twin lens camera when I was 8 that I was given.
Okay.
It was a Kodak, Duomatic, I think it was, or something like that. 620 film. My expertise at the age of 8 was, goodness, what's all this paper wrapping around the film? Let me get rid of that. So there were a couple of visits to the chemist,
yeah,
which is what you did in those days, and he corrected my misapprehension that you didn't need the paper backing the film to protect it from the light. Basic phenomenon of film photography.
Yeah. Now, John, you've just come back from Photokina in Germany, which I can imagine must have been just an eye-opening experience. Can you give us some perspective on what it... Well, first of all, what is Photokina all about?
Well, Photokina is a biannual, that's every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Event that's held in Cologne in what used to be West Germany. In fact, its sister city, Bonn, used to be the capital.
Right.
And it seems all so long ago. But that was where the Western photo industry sort of, after the war, sort of decided that it would convene in the, I think it was 1950, the first one after the war.
Right.
And then every 2 years since then, there has been this big show. I first went there in 1972, so I've just been to my 19th show.
Wow.
And 2 years from now, I will have clocked up 40 years of going to Photokina in September, which is when it's always held.
Right. So is it very, like, is it similar to PMA that we have here in Australia and in LA and that sort of thing?
Well, yes and no. It's probably about 6 times to 10 times bigger. It used to be 20 times bigger.
Wow.
But what's really changed is that the big companies that used to fill a whole hall, like a Polaroid or a Kodak or an Agfa, they're really not the big exhibitors now. It's the Sonys and the Panasonics and the Canons and the Nikons.
Yeah.
And the Samsungs that are the big draw cards now.
Right.
And the show is a combination of consumer photography, industrial photography, audiovisual, and broadcast. So there is broadcast television, although in a year like this, where there is a big German show also in Berlin for the broadcast industry, and another show in, I think it's Holland, IBC, which is the main television broadcast show in Europe. Perhaps a little less emphasis on that. It was a smaller show this year, but there was quite a lot of interesting stuff.
Well, I suppose there would have been some, you know, some impact from the global economic crisis of the last 18 months that probably has put a bit of a damper on it. Would I be right in thinking that?
Yes and no. I think the retail industry, of course, in Europe has changed a lot, and the online community gives lots of you a better chance to get the world's best price off the net. But there are a lot of things changing in imaging, and just like the television industry, we've got Fuji out there with 3D in its earliest form. We've got Panasonic with an SLR with a special 3D lens. So that may be one of the trends that one could say is going to emerge. Probably not in the next 2 years in still photography, but probably thereafter.
What, 3D?
3D, I think it's a distinct possibility. It will probably be displayed by the early adopters on 3D television. Whether they then move to these really quite remarkable prints that are available from Fuji that are, frankly, are really, really interesting to view.
Okay.
I think it'll probably first come into people's homes via their new 3D television.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I keep seeing a lot of stuff on the net about, you know, there seems to be a lot of people who go, just hurry up and die already, you know. Like they're over 3D already.
it's taken, where are we now? We're at 2010. So it's 140 years since the first 3D images started appearing as little tintypes, where you mounted two stereoscopic pictures with two lenses, and you used a special pair of eyeglasses. And frankly, much better results than we see in 3D today. No color fringing, just very, very good black and white images that really have you there.
Yeah, right.
And there have been sort of 3D viewers, certainly in my childhood, you know, those little click machines that we saw animals and various other things. So 3D is not new. I don't get overwhelmed by it. In fact, I personally prefer a flat still image that makes my mind work a bit harder.
Yeah, same.
But for some people, it may well be a new phenomenon that artistically they can express themselves differently.
Mm. Now, you mentioned a couple of cameras before. What, out of everything that you saw, what were the cameras that really caught your eye?
I think this year, one of the surprising things was that there were, to the best of my knowledge, no new camera announcements at the show. They had all been announced before the show opened.
Right.
And that's a big change compared with 40 years ago when I first started going to Photokina. The first day of Photokina used to be just a huge set of announcements. If you were a press man, it would have been a difficult day just to get through all of the paper press releases.
Right.
Today, most of that's been announced, and indeed, I think there are slightly informal arrangements made so that no one announces a major camera on the same day as anyone else. It's a sort of gentleman's sort of arrangement that I think actually works really well, so we can all get our stories out and people can actually digest it.
I wonder also, do you think that the reason they announce all the cameras in advance of the opening of the show is so that you know exactly what you need to go and look at while you're there? Like, so that it's not a surprise to you while you're on the show floor? Do you think there's...
That could be the case. The things that were really quite interesting to me were that while we've got traditional DSLRs and there was a little bit of increase in the size of the sensors, this was not a show where megapixels were talked about at all.
Thank goodness.
It's over. In other words, yes, they will produce more resolution. Yes, they will produce less noise. But really now we're getting back to what's the form factor that you want in this camera? What do you want to do with it? And so I'm just as excited by Panasonic's DMC LX5, that lovely little camera, which is the successor to the LX3, which is almost legendary after just 3 years. It's a little compact camera with a 24mm f2 lens with a bit of zoom on it, and enabling you to do wonderful existing light photography. Just added a bit of video to it. Against that, you've got the sensational Canon S95, also a super slim, beautiful unit with HD video now and very low noise capability. And at the other end, you've got the really extraordinary camera, the Fuji Finepix X100, which will come out after Christmas. Don't know what the price will be, but I'd certainly think it would be north of $1,000 here in Australia.
Yeah.
And internationally, probably just a bit under in US dollars. So that's an amazing camera. That's a fixed lens, 35mm, very traditional look, but it's a full APS sensor with 12 megapixels, which is up to 10 times the actual surface area of many of those compact cameras, promising really low noise, existing light photography, which I think for the keen photographer is going to be a very exciting little camera because it's not that big.
It looks a lot like a Leica, but without the badge.
And without about $6,000 to go with it.
Yes.
So that's interesting. And then you've got these new mirrorless interchangeable lens cameras, which are in between a compact camera and an SLR in size, but still support very good image sensors. So you've got a very different looking camera from Samsung, the NX100.
Yep.
You've got extensions of Olympus. They actually announced a new top-end SLR, the E5, which promises some interesting things in that micro four-thirds format.
Right.
And Sony's NEX series really getting its first big airing, but they had an each way bet. They had a different camera than the NEX 5 for people that wanted a more traditional feel in an Alpha A55, and I think that's an interesting camera. Got a semi translucent mirror, so it enables you to have a fairly small form factor, but still have all the advantages of SLR interchangeable lenses. So neat camera.
Yeah, but not without its technological hiccups, though, unfortunately. I don't know if you've been across it. There was I saw a blog post come out on one of the tech blogs that I read through the week about, and this is not only limited to Sony, but apparently they're having some issues with overheating when you're shooting continual video with these translucent mirror bodies.
Oh, okay.
I don't know all the details. I just sort of skimmed through the article, but yeah, I noticed they were saying that you couldn't shoot anything more than about 9 minutes of continuous video before these things would just lock up because they overheated.
So, well, I would argue that unless you're trying to cover someone's wedding, anyone who has more than 20 seconds per scene
absolutely
is not shooting video the way good creative video is shot.
That's right.
So, yes, that happens. It's a brand new prototype. It's not actually released yet. I'm sure they'll fix that. Most of the major camera companies have had in the last few years, they've had little blips and they get over them and they go on to produce just fantastic cameras.
Yeah, I think just about any new technology suffers its hiccups, you know, of one type or another.
Yep.
So I'm sure they'll work it out. Now, what about video? You know, talking about video, what else was on the scene?
Well, the video market has had a fairly tough time worldwide. This year, it's down about 15% in some markets, but it's coming back, and it's coming back because there's a new form factor.
Now, sorry, when you say video's down in sales worldwide, are you talking about digital SLR video, or are you talking about broadcast video? Or
no, I'm talking about consumer video here.
Right.
And that's largely because people are saying, oh, maybe I can get all I need in a compact camera, which in many cases they can, because they have HD, although generally 720 rather than the full HD. and compact cameras. But I think the main reason is because these new cameras like the JVC Pixio or the Bloggy from Sony, or indeed the camera from Cisco, the Flip Minnow HD, they're very small form factor, very easy to use. And many of them give this great feature of being able to create an instant YouTube video that you can upload from the camera without a computer. So, nice. You know, these are the new generation requirements. People want to have their images accessible through Facebook and
YouTube.
Yep. So, you know, that's where video is going. And I think it's in for another resurgence. Because they're easy to use, small, and you can carry them. And of course, at the same time, if you've got an iPhone 4, you've also got a video camera built into that. You've got an iPhone, all the new Nokia cameras have video built in. So people are using video more than they've ever used them. Whether they're going to have standalone videos for everything, I think it'll be more of the specialists are going to use their DSLR cameras like the D3 with HD now, and cameras obviously that probably set the scene, the Canon EOS 5D with its remarkable production quality.
Yeah.
Good enough to produce last season's final edition of House.
Yeah.
Just wonderful stuff.
Yeah. It's you never would have dreamed of this stuff 10 years ago, you know, that Hollywood would, you know, adopt digital SLR for shooting, you know, major TV shows. You just wouldn't have dreamed of it, would you?
Well, I think the fact is they produce extraordinarily good quality, and there's a whole range of lenses. I think, I can't remember how many Canon has. I think it's about 60 or 70 lenses in their range today.
Wow.
Which gives huge, huge flexibility in terms of what's possible with long telephoto or super wide, and with an optical quality that is obviously up to full broadcast standard.
Mm.
So more power to them. The gadgets that were out there that go with these cameras now are a wonder to behold. There is no question. They look as big as and expensive as a full Sony broadcast camera by the time you put all of the little hinges and flaps and extra capabilities, including I saw up there a sort of half-frame mirror or semi-translucent mirror so that someone could actually run an auto cue in front of their Canon EOS 5. So
nice.
You know, all good features, and people are using this stuff.
Yeah. What about accessories, John? What was there at Fotokina?
The list is really almost too long. What can I say that was absolutely standout? I think there was quite a lot of audio accessorization, and that's obviously going to be something that photographers are going to have to adapt to, because just using the built-in microphone, as we all know, is not really going to be the way to go. And there's a whole new skill level that people are going to have to learn. One of the things that's absent from many of today's first generation DSLRs with video is a good pre-monitoring capability for audio out, so that you can get a good idea what the sound quality is going to be. If you're putting a shotgun microphone on the top of the camera, you want to know that if you're going to zoom, that it's not going to get picked up. You're going to want to make sure that you can eliminate adjacent sound, and that you've actually got your mic close enough to the subject to pick up the sound without interference. These are skills that most photographers don't have.
No.
And indeed, most videographers up to now haven't really had to concentrate on. But when you've got stunning pictures up there, you're now looking at broadcast quality, and your mind immediately says, wait a minute, the sound isn't broadcast quality. Why not?
Yeah.
So you've got to have them in sync, and you've got to have them at the same quality. The pictures are great. You've got to get them down to the same level.
Yeah, I must say, even though this is not an area I've got into yet, I must say I feel really confident that when I do, I shouldn't have a problem with it.
Well, let's talk again. I think you'll find that it's quite challenging.
I can imagine it will be. I can imagine.
I spent my early days trying to be a rather bad reporter, and every time it rained, on the microphone, you know, even if you had the little wind cover on it. In fact, it made it worse because it dripped into the microphone and stopped it.
Oh.
All those kinds of things, and wind and all those kinds of things. So that there are lots of gadgets at the show. To fly our own flag at LoPro, we introduced the 10th anniversary of our street and field system. We introduced a complete new series, and SNF Series 2 brings to the world a modular system that you wear, and that you build it from basically a chassis of various belts and harnesses, and add on the bits that you need. And it's designed from the bottom up as an audio equipped carrying system. So it's got little pouches for someone else is joining me on this broadcast, I think. So it adds a whole capability to photo carrying equipment with the sound capacity. And it deals with, where do I put my headphones? Where do I hang them? Where do I put my shotgun microphone? How do I change lenses easily when I've got all this gear with me? And it's a really lovely system. So we'll be launching that here in Australia and around the world in, well, a very short period of time, about the end of October.
Fantastic.
So that's pretty exciting stuff for us. And the other one, I think, frankly, was the Lens Baby, the brand new Lens Baby product that is very different from the products we've seen before. This is a device that gives you a slice of an image as opposed to a zone of an image that's sharp. So it sort of goes through a plane of sharpness, and anything in that plane is sharp. And it's designed for Micro Four Thirds cameras, which is different because we haven't had that capability before.
Right.
And what's more, with the adapter, you can use your old Nikon F-mount lenses on it. So there's a lot of those hanging around, and you can pick them up very inexpensively from the last of those people that are still selling secondhand lenses, or on eBay, of course, and get that fantastic image quality that those lenses have, and bring them all back to life and produce this lovely Lens Baby effect. So this will be a product that's out at the end of October, and it's designed for Micro Four Thirds, and it's neat stuff.
And is Maxwell Australia carrying Lens Baby?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
It's a product that is a word of mouth product, I had the experience of being in July in Italy, and I went to Pisa for the first time.
Okay.
And I thought, what can I say visually that's new about this wonderful edifice up here? And I decided I'd have a go with Lens Baby, and I must say, it suddenly gave a new life. I could make the tower fall down with that lovely, blurry, soft, dreamy effect without having to move one brick.
Yeah.
It was a really enjoyable experience.
Okay, and can I venture a little bit off topic and ask you, how was Mauritius?
Mauritius. Well, Mauritius has been my altar home for some 40 years, nearly 40 years of marriage.
Okay.
My wife's family comes from there, and we took the family for a wonderful 90th birthday celebration, my mother-in-law.
Oh, lovely.
And I got to shoot some pictures in some beautiful spots tested out my Kokan filters, and with and without, and seeing the different effects. And that was a really interesting experience, because it's only when you shoot with and without a filter that you suddenly realize just how much easier it is to get the right picture first time, and how many hours you save not having to do post-production.
Yes, absolutely. Mate, I can tell you, the week I spent up in the Walgett Shire shooting for Outback New South Wales Tourism, my filters they got more use than they've ever had.
Working overtime, weren't
they? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and look, I think that is a point that I really would want to make. I was shooting fairly wide pictures, and the contrast between the brightest point and the darkest point in many of the pictures when I was doing landscape shots was at least 8 or 10 stops.
Yeah.
Now, most digital cameras don't feel pretty good, and I've got a good camera. I've got a Nikon D700,
yep.
So that's a good full frame, fairly tolerant. But unless I had a graduated filter, I just couldn't contain the dynamic range without blowing out the highlights or losing all the shadow detail.
Yeah.
So that graduated filter across the frame just made it so much easier to get the picture down properly.
Now, I might just pick your brains while you're here, because the set of filters that I've got are the ND2, the ND4, and the ND8. So that's a plus one stop, plus two stop, plus four, three stop, and they're all graduated.
Yes.
And I found that quite often I was stacking two and sometimes all three of them together.
Yes.
And what I did find was that I got a fair amount of colour shift because of that.
Yes. I mean, it really depends on which filters you combine with the others. You're getting some incident light between the filters. That will have an effect.
Oh, okay.
And also... the cumulative effect of what starts out as appearing to be neutral, remember, it's optimized for the spectrum of the sensors. So when you add three times that or five times that, then you've actually shifted away from the design criteria that the original designers were planning. So you'll tend to find, if you do that with multiple filters, you'll tend to get a slight purple cast.
Yeah.
And that actually is fairly easy to remove in post. There is no way that you can actually totally eliminate that when you're using more than one filter on top of the other.
So do Kokan make a stronger graduated neutral density?
We make an ND8. But that's as strong as we go. I think that you have to go up to the IR, which is equivalent to about 20. Generally speaking, you'd use two, and in your color balancing, you'd go to custom balance and just slightly shift the color away from the purple spectrum.
Yeah,
it's probably 200 degrees to maybe 300 degrees, and not more.
Oh, okay, nice to know. Excellent.
Something like that.
Well, John, thank you very much for your time, and I'm glad that you had a great time, although it sounds like it was fairly exhausting all up.
Well, you have to cover a lot of ground, and of course, you know, we also were working with our distributors around Asia, so that was a very gratifying thing. I've been to China two or three times this year, and the most remarkable thing that I've encountered, and it was reinforced again during the show, the caliber of photography throughout Asia, which really we haven't seen enough of, other than Japanese photography, in the recent past. I think as the links to camera organizations grow between our two countries, particularly in China, we're going to see some absolutely wonderful work coming to Australia from the amateur movement as well as the professionals. And I think people are going to be blown away by it. It's just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, right. All right, mate. Well, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you taking some time out to have a chat with us and fill us in on what happened at Photokina.
Bruce, it's a pleasure, and I wish you well.
Thank you very much. All right, well, that will do it for this week. Shelton and Glenn should be back next week, hopefully, from the States. So I don't know whether I'll have Shelton on next week. He'll probably be jet-lagged as much as John is at the moment. But either way, I'll have somebody to talk to next week, and we will talk to you then.
Shutters Inc. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.